sales records for 2 years.
This is not about.
You have every August, these permits expire at the end of August. I know it talks about the expiration date later. But in August, you have reports due. There are quite a few folks here in the room that go through last night that have not renewed their permits, and then I'll ask them, where's my permit? Because I have 2 weeks to do 400 of them, if possible. So, because they expire at the end of August. The renewals are due 2 weeks before they expire. I just do 400 and something in 2 weeks, so there is a renewed permit that doesn't work that way. These renewals also normally indicate that you're renewing. It has a summary of all the animals affected by these rules that you've had, kind of started with, bought, sold, died, lost, processed, gave away, and the end total kind of ended with. Along with that is a purchase log, so here you write down the date of purchase, how many, what kind of animal, who was you purchased from, and your permit number. And then collection log, so you put down the animal the county was collected in. You do ask the date. It just asks the county and how many. It's not as one of those things that's helpful, but I don't know what you take where. Nor does it have a date, so law enforcement can't use it to say you were out somewhere you weren't supposed to be.
I believe it used to be that collectors were required to submit reports.
Not any permit holders, which we're going to talk about that permit next, did have to be required to submit reports as well, because they were the ones that actively are collecting. Actually, most zoning dealers don't collect. The non-game permit holders are the ones who are out collecting and selling to dealers. They used to have to turn in reports. Somebody stopped that. I'm not sure why. Probably budget reasons. We don't have a minute how to enter all that data anywhere. So we don't have an accurate capture of what the commercial collectors are using and spilling on. We don't know how it impacts because we aren't collecting those non-game permit holders.
And the dealer reports really don't provide them.
Yeah.
Commercial trade in Western Diamondback rattlesnakes using our dealer reports, and
even though most of those folks buy from non-game permit holders, it still doesn't accurately reflect it, because there are non-game permit folks outside of roundups and stuff who actively collecting snakes and selling them to other people, selling them out of state. And this is one thing that I'm pushing for to help me do my job, is I'm trying to get these two permits online. You have to submit your reports online. So I want to get back to non-game permit holders entering their data. And it would be a real time to go in, like the day you get back from collecting, enter it. Or non-game dealers, we get the day, the end of the day, they can enter all their sales or whatever. So I'm going to be pushing for that, getting this permit into, we've got this TWINS is what it's called. It's an online thing. All your permits are in it. All your stuff got to go first. And but I'm working on trying to get mine in there so we can actually accurately see what's going on somewhat. Okay, so non-game permit. This is one that it's kind of got two purposes. First one is you can use it to collect in the wild, whitelist, and then sell it to non-game dealers. You can only sell to non-game dealers in Texas. But a non-game permit holder can also buy or acquire non-game wildlife from a non-game dealer or from someone out of state. But they can't breed. They can only buy or sell to non-game dealers. Right? Oh, the only people who can breed are non-game dealers. It wasn't in the slide, but the only time it mentions propagation is under what a non-game dealer can do. So that means all non-game dealers can breed. Even if you're not selling, you can't breed anything in these rules without a non-game dealer. Okay, so some exceptions to having a permit. So whitelist. So if it's captive bred and you buy it from a non-game dealer, you don't have to have a permit, okay, to have less than 25 off the whitelist. Same for blacklist. This doesn't mention the blacklist too much because at first when the regulations came out, my predecessor was telling people you couldn't commercially trade blacklist species. And because of how one sentence is written, we believe that. But in the preamble of the regulations, they later clarified that. So this doesn't mention blacklist too much. So
you said you can't breed them.
Mm-hmm. You have to keep them separate. You cannot.
Then in the regulation, they must be maintained separate.
No, it says only dealers can propagate. So putting them together intentionally, you know they're going to propagate because they're wild animals and that's what they do. You put them together knowing they're going to do that. That is breeding.
I tell them not to.
Destroy the eggs. You have to destroy the eggs. So if you wanted to house them together, you have to destroy the eggs. If you didn't want to destroy the eggs. So if you want to do education, this is one thing a lot of people think that because they have wildlife from Texas, they have to have an educational permit to do education. Anything in these two lists, porcupines and blacklist. If I wanted to have a program where I use a porcupine, I have a hunting license. If you go out and collect a porcupine, I could have it forever and do whatever I wanted with it except for breed it, sell it, and offer it for sale. So I can do education, I can do scientific research, put it as a pet. And as long as I had a hunting license when I collected it, or if you find somebody selling them out of state that breeds them, go off the source and get a receipt. So that's one of the exceptions to not having to have a living permit. And we're going to talk about that more because there is a possession limit, which the non-game permit gets you around the possession limit. That's the other thing.
I do education and I'm a teacher as well, but I'll be doing the education just like every other Sunday. Uh-huh. It's all the business and stuff. So how does that... I also went in and got a non-game permit.
Uh-huh.
But how does that affect, I don't have receipts on these animals, but even if you rescue.
Well, that's the thing is, that's another aspect of it, is anything in here, you don't get a rehab permit to rehab. And so if somebody picks it up and brings it to you, technically it's not a lawful source unless they don't have a license. But who's going to run all that down? Unless you're breeding and selling them. Then we have an issue. But if you're doing education, you're doing rescue, it's discretion and the reason there has to be about where did you get that. If you got one,
it's almost done.
Do what?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, this is one thing. And now, if somebody wants reptiles, amphibians on their rehab permit, or they want a rehab permit for it, we will give it to them. But you don't have to have it to do it. And so that's the other thing is educators, well, rehab permit holders and educators. So rehabbers take in stuff that people pick up. Most of the time, they don't have a hunting license when they do it, and they're not collecting it for the intention of somebody keeping it. They're rescuing it, so they give it to a rehabber. Rehabber has it for a while, so just like to say it's not releasable. It goes to an educator with an education permit, and they get to keep it forever. Technically, I mean, it is lawfully acquired, but it could never be used to breed or sell because it wasn't taken from the wild, you know, lawful way as far as the beast went. So, if you're doing education, you're fine.
Hey, Megan, I'm going to stop you for just a second. We're going to do the breakout for the EU stuff now, so anybody wants to do that? How far down is that, Jeff?
It's all the way down at the end of the hall. You turn left, and we'll get Cindy out here to guide everybody. So anybody that wants to do the EU breakout on import and export, go ahead and follow me.
And anybody wants to stick with the state stuff, just stay where you are.
Gary, are you going to the EU? Take notes.
Everything's bigger here.
Okay, thanks. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I'm trying to do this.
No, you're good.
Okay, this is another exception to having a permit. Now, a lot of people don't do this, that I know of. And a couple of guys that commercially sell frog legs, they have no big deal with permits just because they don't want to be hassled by somebody going, where's your permit to do this? They sell whole frog legs. But selling non-game wildlife for and ready for immediate consumption and individual portion servings, so you're subject to tax, sales tax, don't need a permit. So if you wanted to buy prepackaged individual serving out bullfrog legs from some company in Louisiana and sell them here in your store or your restaurant, you don't need a non-game permit. But if you you're going to go collect bullfrogs, dress them out, and then sell them to people in the non-native dealer permit. So you collected it, you prepared it, and now you need non-native dealer permit. The same thing with the guys who collect rattlesnakes, park them out, and park them. Okay, this also does not regulate coyotes, bobcats, mountain lions, rabbits, American bison, and diamondback terrapin. No one can have a diamondback terrapin. No one can sell diamondback terrapin. It's any subspecies, the subspecies of our species. If it's a diamondback terrapin and doesn't matter if it's from Asia, you can't have it. It's not a string. There's nothing that lets you have them to breed and sell them. Now, the educational permit holders, the zoological permit holders, can be given authority to have them, but bison. So everything else, you actually don't need anything from us to possess, as long as you acquire it legally. Now coyotes have a rabies quarantine restriction, transport restriction on from the health department though. So while we say you can have one or have one, the health department doesn't let you transport them unless you're a certain type of individual. So unless you're a peace officer, an employee, or a rehabber, that kind of thing, you can't actually transport. So if you have one as a pet, you got sick, that's how to come to you. And that's if your city or county let them have it. City or county can prevent you from having any of these scary things. If you wanted a pet mountain lion, you could have one. As long as the city or county said you still couldn't. So, I have
a question. Rehabbers
can do coyotes. Right. Health department. Well, rehabbers can transport. No, rehabbers can't transport them. Coyotes and foxes can be transported by peace officers, zoo employees, an individual hired or contracted with the city or local government. Raccoons can be transported by rehabbers and educational permit holders, pest control operators. Coyotes and foxes cannot be rehabbed, which they're going to change that soon. So,
there's a distance restriction on the raccoons, so 10 miles.
Right, there is a distance restriction, and that is still going to apply, right?
I have a question on the diamondback terrapins. Last month, we were in Louisiana at a reptile show. And, I mean, there was people all over Louisiana that were selling the diamondback terrapins. And, you know, there was people from Texas going in there and buying them. So what happens when they get caught?
They get them away
and they get tickets. So even with any kind of legal documents?
Right. Diamondback terrapins are not on the threatened endangered list. They're listed in the fishing proclamation, and you cannot have them on anything threatened or endangered. In the threatened endangered species regulations, you can actually have one as a pet, vegetation with it, have it, as long as you acquire it from out of state from a lawful source, and it's documented with a receipt or a signed notarized affidavit. So, if you're in Louisiana and they're selling indigo snakes, and someone is allowed to be doing that, you can buy one and come back and be fine. But diamondback terrapins are not included in that because they're not in the threatened endangered regulation. They're in a separate other proclamation and aren't given that exception in that proclamation.
And then what about, like, the alligator snapping?
That's on the threatened list, right?
So because that's the same thing in Louisiana. I mean, they're all over the place.
Right, so if you wanted to go to, if it's legal to do there, and you bought it legally from there, you can bring it back. You just need to
get a receipt.
You acquired it that way.
But not a diamondback or a diamondback
terrapin. What if you collect?
What, in the state where it's legal?
Yes.
Okay. But you've got to have something documenting that's on the body. You've got to have some
videotape that you acquired it.
Well, that's the thing, is the threatened endangered population.
Is a hunting license for that state?
Right. There's a couple of options. It says bill of sale identifying the animal. It says signed, notarized affidavit stating that's where it came from. So you could, you know, keep a copy of your hunting license or whatever it was from that state. And then write a signed letter that says, I collected this animal here on the state and have no rights in that state. That way you can keep it. You can't breed or sell it, but you can keep it and you can have it. So, diamondback terrapins aren't subject to that because they're in another proclamation and aren't given that authorization. And why they, I was looking at something online the other day and found in back as just as early as 2006 or 7, I forget what year it was, we were still allowing people to collect them and sell them. And we stopped, and why these weren't put on the blacklist or put on the threatened endangered list, I don't know. But I don't understand why they did these the way they did. I've never asked anybody.
It was real haphazard, and the terrapin thing came from sort of a shrimp and oyster.
Is it because they're water?
Yeah.
More aquatic?
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, so here we go. This is what you can do without a non-name or non-dealer permit. All right, so blacklist. You can have 6 or less of each species on the list and not need a permit as long as you legally acquired it. So if you collected it, you don't have any license, if you bought it from a non-name dealer, if state or out of state, you need documentation, don't worry about it.
Okay, it's per, like per person in the household.
Right, technically per person in the household, correct. Whitelist is 25 or less of each species. Again, documentation of how you got it, or you have a money license and you collected it. Now, if you want to have more than these possession limits, you can either buy a non-game permit or you can buy a non-game dealer permit. Cheaper option is a non-game permit, it's $19. So you could have 100 box turtles. You're not supposed to be breeding and selling your possession of non-game dealer permit.
When it says 4 or 5 of here, is it of one particular species or
a yes, species? It's of each species. This is each not species. An aggregate. There used to be some old stuff out there, and you'll eventually find it if you look. And it actually kind of lumps both together. At first, they had it where 25 in total from both lists, and I don't know, they changed it. It's 25 or less of each species on the white list, or each subspecies on the white list.
The other question I have is there any push to break down the list to subspecies?
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's a big issue.
Yeah. I've had meetings with law enforcement and everybody because Jeff mentioned yesterday it covers non-natives as well. The code and the regulation both say indigenous, but because law enforcement's reasoning is they can't tell the difference.
Right.
So, and it has it to the species, so it includes any new subspecies. So they kind of what they're doing. And I've had meetings with them about it, and I just said, plan out. This needs to be done. Where if you just sit down, me and Andy, and people from the reputable folks from the herd community, and know what you're talking about. List everything down to the subspecies level that is found in Texas.
Yep. And it needs to be more clear.
Right, take indigenous out.
Right.
Take the word indigenous out and just literally list everything.
Yep. Make it out.
Then it's black and white, so it's questioning, yep. Do I need a non-dealer permit for some of your milk and eggs?
Megan, now that you wrote that subject, I think probably that what we're talking about here is breaking it down to subspecies level by state. I think that's probably one of the biggest problems that most people have with it is, you know, you can get out when you, milk snakes, for example, there's a zillion subspecies of them.
Yeah.
Many of them don't occur in Texas.
Right.
But because the state opts to only break stuff down to
the species.
I know the story I've been told is it's too hard to train people to identify the subspecies, so this is how we take care of it. That's probably one of the biggest issues I think most of the herd community has with this.
With our rights.
And I quickly realized that when I started doing this, I was looking at the reports and I'm seeing what people are putting, and I'm like, well, they're putting everything, like hamsters and, you know, stuff that's definitely
not even covered.
Bearded dragons, and I'm like, why are people putting this on here? And apparently what is going on, and what I have to tell people, is if you have something that you're breeding and selling that is a subspecies of what's in here, you put it on the report. Now, if you put 100 milk snakes, I don't put that in the database. So I have to wade through everything to figure out what you put down. So if you put milk snake, and it may be 4 different subspecies of milk snake, I don't know because you put milk snake. So I record that as milk snakes in the database. So we're muddling our...
You're coming up with a data set that's flawed based on that.
It's
yeah.
not monitoring the actual... Well, and a lot of those aren't collected, so it doesn't matter. It's not monitoring the collection. It's just the purchase and sale of them. But, you know, people don't break that down because who wants to sit there and put Sinaloa and Missouri and Mexican well, on and on and on? Yeah, I mean... People do, but I mean, a lot of times they'll put milk snake, or because it says gopher bull snake, they'll put that gopher bull snake. Or they might separate them, but then I can put them in there in the same together. Speckled and desert king snake, same thing. They put king snake. Well, I've seen people do that, and I'm like, okay, I have to have which kind of king snake it is.
Right.
Do you want
I'm told you have to put it. If it's a subspecies of what's on here, you have to put it on the paper.
Which means that if you have a California king snake, it has to go in under the getulon.
Because technically, to breed and sell them, you need this
one. And that's what I have to tell you. Megan, I'm going to be working with Texas Parks and Wildlife, I hope, over the next year to resolve some of the non-game species issues.
We need somebody, we need people to keep asking and keep pushing. I'm not only trying to work on these regulations, but rehab rights need to be rewritten. They haven't been touched since 97.
I want to make your job easier.
So, if you need to address this.
When we were in Chester, we're not there every day, but we have employees who can, you know, on the staff, and I said there are 20 reasons I got to tell them. But, kingsnake, I mean, we were told previously that they told this person that took the snake, and I went to the same where, go ahead and do it. The more information you have, the better. Because again, if they think I understand and they need proof, we have it documented. And if you need something,
yeah, even though the regulations don't require you to document who you sold to, I mean, it seems like it would be a good business practice to record that. I mean, at least the name of the state they're from.
Just so you can get some like, that's the person I have here. A lot of people come from Mexico, which is a combine of water and kind of Texas. And they come and they want to take it to Mexico. And I'm like, well, not
that's a big dog.
Federal
import export? Yeah, they have to get
people.
So I don't know
what those are.
So they've got to comply with state law and they've got to comply with federal law to take those snakes back across into Mexico.
Oh, and then they come and ask me how can they bring it back.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like, so that's where.
But,
get an attorney.
But yeah, I want to work on these. I mean, in the course of doing what I do, I found, I had notes. You should see my book. My book, my copy of these rights are just written on. There's two notes everywhere. Stuff missing off the list. Stuff written incorrectly. Common names are wrong. So, which common names always change or whatever. But in the herb stuff, the common names really don't change that often. You know, it's not. It's like birds. I mean, you do it the same way. Birds are just common.
They do and they don't. I remember when the white list and black list came out, and you know my history with dealing with it. When it first came out, they put corn snakes
on
it. Yes,
it had corn snake and it had house mouse on it.
Yeah.
What? Did you ask Andy Price? Did you ask anybody, a biologist, what to put on the list? Yeah. And they quickly took that off.
Yeah.
Because that was just...
That was a little bit too much, yeah.
Yeah.
The Texas is a little bit different.
The what?
Can you do subspecies in Texas?
Right, Kalinskii is on there. It's a separate species from what everything else is in the pet industry. I don't know anybody who ever looks up Kalinskii. I never see that.
Do you know, we talked about species and subspecies. Do you know what Texas Parks and Wildlife uses as their model for species? In other words, when you guys pull your species list or your subspecies list, do you go to a specific entity that provides?
I'm assuming that when they did this list, they used the herpetologist, the taxonomist at the time, which was Andy Price.
Yeah.
They probably used like resources like the Herps of Texas website and those people from UT, the herpetologist from UT.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they went to the reptile community and asked the experts what should or shouldn't be on there. I'm assuming I wasn't there when they did, or I was, but I wasn't involved in that. So I'm assuming that's what they did. That's what I know I want to do.
Well, in the current situation with the taxonomy, you know, you start watching some of this stuff and it changes just like this constantly. Our proposals to, and some of them, My personal opinion, some of them are sort of far-fetched. Some of them you can understand. But with all these changes in species and subspecies that are continuously occurring, you ask, well, now, which is right? And I think what it boils down to is what does the scientific community finally accept? You know, you can present a paper, or write a paper proposing to rename something, whatever. And that doesn't make it so. And it takes, does the scientific community over a period of time, do they accept that? And I think that's what you have to go with. You can't, just because somebody proposes it doesn't make it.
Right, and that's, I consider, you know, I'm going to bring up this idea of subspecies right here in the mouth of the subspecies level. Because even things can change at the species level, they do. And if that were to happen and that change were to become accepted by the scientific community and everybody, again, all we have to do is go to the commission and say, we're changing this because this is now the accepted thing. Okay. So it doesn't affect the resources, just changing it on paper to clarify, or the commission is going to let us do it.
What is the law, how does the law treat something that's not listed on either a black or white list?
Like,
a native species that you haven't listed on.
Okay, like bobcats, for example?
Well, something that's not specifically dealt with otherwise. What if you have a native species that you don't list? What does the statute say?
I don't think that they have a native species that they haven't listed. I've seen their lists.
I don't think, I mean, the only thing that's not in here, that's not regulated by bees, that's not a game animal, is mountain lions, bobcats, rabbits, coyotes. And those, there's nothing anywhere that says you can't have it. Of course, there's nothing anywhere that says you can have one, but there's nothing that says you can't possess one. There's nothing that says you have to have a permit to have this. So anything not in these rags, anything not a game animal, not anything threatening endangered species, is something that you can have without a permit. And those things that aren't mentioned in any place, or for bears, were those five things that I mentioned.
So you don't have any animals that fall in between the black and white?
No.
I think probably the thing that comes closest there probably might be the diamondback terrapin.
Right.
If I'm old Joe Harper and I won't know what I can collect in Texas or what I can go out and catch, and I'm sitting there and I want to be legal, so I go look at what's threatened in Texas, what's endangered, and you look on there, well, there's nothing. Diamondback terrapin aren't listed.
You have to know that it's in the fishing.
And in fact, we had this discussion six months ago. So if people don't see it on either list, so they assume they can take it.
Now, they're not on either list. Those four species of the turtle are not on either list. There are in these regulations, they have a separate section. I'm going to talk about those. There's some slides on those.
What's amazing is that people think they can collect it, but then they're showing there's just a case in the state of Texas that in San Antonio, they had a pig. But the HOV, you know, the HOV, the Homeowners Association, HOA, sorry, they did not state it that they cannot have a pig in their, you know, in where they live, in the subdivision. So they want, the people wanted to have their pig, and the pig is a pig, because they bought it as a miniature. Well, the pig was over by 200 pounds or something. But they want the person wants, but then they went back and they're putting in their HOA law. It's weird, you know, because you have all this.
Right. Yeah.
But they didn't challenge it on a zoning basis. They just challenged the association.
Just the association, because they were all the city.
So it's a question relating to if you have a non-game permit, they come from California and came to Texas to visit, and I'm from the Irving, and I looked up, it was extremely difficult to find where the laws were relating to. You know, any permit, what you can do. So that, and I understand what they're in California, and I'd like to get a fishing license, and I can go curving and look for stuff, even though I'm going to keep it, just right. See what I can find. And what it came down to was that what I think I understood was that you can't night drive, or
you can't.
You can, because it looked like you couldn't.
No. You would not be able to have a license.
Let's clarify that, because I've been dealing with
it.
You can walk the right-of-way on the roadside, but you may not collect from a motor vehicle. You may not collect from a vehicle with a light.
And you cannot collect on the road surface.
And you cannot collect on the road surface.
You can drive down the road, stop, get out, pick up a snake off the side of the road.
Off the side of the road, and the side of the road is off the asphalt.
Off the paved surface.
Actually, and that's not really accurate. It specifically says no artificial lighting, so you can drive down the road during the day, but if you use any type of artificial lighting, it is completely illegal.
with the vehicle.
From the vehicle to the roadway.
That's right.
Once you're in the ditch, you can have
your car. What
constitutes the side of the road?
The side of the road is
from the white stripe,
on the
it's like a football.
It says unpaved surface, it's in the code. It says the unpaved surface as defined by TxDOT. I can tell you exactly what it says.
It says unimproved surface.
Right.
So how is that applied
on dirt roads?
To make sure, as it says, don't make your
deal on the main the drivable surface, the navigable surface.
So if I'm walking down the side of the road and I see a gray man in the middle of the road, and a semi is coming towards it, I can't. I gotta let it get squashed.
I can chase it off the road. And
you can chase it.
But once it's off the road,
This is where I'm fighting for kids. I'm going to try.
But you can't cut his head off.
So is this by statute?
Yes.
What's the rationale for that?
So to save it, I can't kill
it.
The rationale is you can go down a road and kill the snake, whether you use headlights or anything else under this, but you cannot legally pick it up. Off of the road.
No, I understand.
Can you move it off of the road to save the little life?
Right.
And this is why law enforcement's not here. This is one of the rules that I'm hoping that we can work with here with Texas Parks and Wildlife to make it easier for everybody, not only on the black and white list, non-game species list, but the road collecting laws and things like that. I would love to see the non-game advisory council come back at Texas Parks and Wildlife.
It hasn't been there since I've been here.
No, they're back. Oh. Yeah, it's a wildlife diversity advisory committee.
Okay.
And it's been reinstated. They're active.
What's their role exactly?
They provide sort of non-partisan third-party advice to the division on typically on regulatory issues, and they're sort of a first firing for things that may come up to before the commission. For example, if you want to bring an issue to the commission. It's a real good idea to run it through the Wildlife Diversity Advisory Committee first, get their seal of approval. They're gonna want to see that it's been approved.
Do we know who will speak the law?
Yes. Well, they all wear boots during the meeting. it's folks from partner agencies. We have Nature Conservancy, some folks from different universities. Consultants or two. There's a representative from the comptroller's office.
We need to see what we can do to get some stakeholders on that. Because although those organizations are great, conservation organizations are great, and regulatory agencies are great, we need some stakeholder input. Because I think the stakeholder input in the end is going to streamline the rules she has to work with, the rules you have to work with, and the rules we have to work with. And I'm all about streamlining and making things easy for everybody. And making data sets that are usable.
I think Carter has to invite you. So we have to, somebody, maybe you or John or something, has to have Carter send you an official invitation to be on that.
Well, I mean, Carter's signature is on it, but I don't know.
Yeah, it comes from his office.
I know it originates well below that.
Yeah, the Falcon and Raptor Council, and even we have a wildlife rehab. It's not an advisory commission. It's a user group, and so we say, okay, this is what we want to change. We don't have to wait for them to approve it. We just say, okay, here's what we want to do. What's your opinion? We had to send the rehabs we wanted to invite to be a part of it. We had to send them letters that were from Carter to be on it. It was really official, and that was just a group where we are just bouncing stuff off of it, saying, hey, we're going to change this. Anything bad or good or whatever to say about it, but we're doing it. Whereas an advisory council they actually have to go, yes, we can do that, or we're cool with that. So there is a formal process to move on it. And I don't know who any does it, probably John Davis.
Or Clayton.
Or Clayton.
Probably John.
Yeah.
Megan, I know your Fox Turtle data collection.
On the nation trackers?
What program, yes.
Yeah.
You know, that one there, I recall looking at that thing, and it's got information. The thing that y'all want the person to collect, one of the things is taking measurements and this and that, the Fox Turtle. Well, in reality, probably 75% of those observations are made off the roadway, and you're wanting to go pick it up and measure the turtle on the roadway.
You can wait till we get on the side of the road.
Not even saw it in your headlights.
Today, most of today's cars, your headlights run 24 hours a day.
I receive all of those reporting reports, so that they all come to me.
Okay.
And, I've never once considered calling law enforcement on somebody reporting Fox Turtle observations.
But it's
a good point. You know, there are inconsistencies in there. And those are the sorts of things that, you know, those of you who wish to make this an issue that you bring up with our agency, those are excellent examples of inconsistencies there. But please don't restrict people's abilities and document Fox tools.
What I'm trying to make it is that some people know that they can't move them off the roadway, so instead of getting the information, they're going to say, no, I'm not touching that.
You just can't literally touch it.
It's very well known. All boxers are
allowed. You can't collect it.
I play it really loud.
I'm allowed to play that from my car as long as I'm out of my car once I pick them up. When it gets to the sun.
As long as you're in the dark without the headlights.
I mean, you can't take possession.
Well, and, you know, this is one of those things that it's not written out.
Unfortunately, it's a public safety issue.
Right.
They don't want people screeching
through a flashlight,
blinding oncoming cars.
Sure. Yeah. Screeching through a hole in the middle of the road would be a problem.
And that's the problem. They're trying to balance
public safety
with this. It's tough to do.
That may not always be
In my experience dealing with game wardens in Texas, in the areas where herping in the field is popular.
Didn't they have a little bit of a different attitude?
Hmm?
Didn't they tend to have a different attitude?
Well, what it is this. Out there in the herping areas where it's popular to herp, they're going to assume that you're collecting. But in virtually every county in the state, they're going to assume you're not collecting. They're going to assume you're more than likely a rehabber or somebody assisting an injured animal or moving an animal off the road, simply because most of those game wardens don't deal with people field collecting, so it's never been an issue that crops up. So they're going to assume that you're trying to save an animal more than one. If you're out there on 610 in Houston today and you see a box turtle, the game warden in Houston isn't going to think you're hunting box turtles on 610. He's going to think you're trying to save it from the traffic.
And when I saw how much non-resident rapid traffic permit costs, I was dumbfounded. $378. Because what I understood, we set prices based on recovering the cost of actually administering the permit, administering the issue of the permit, and just the program as a whole. When I asked about the raptor trapping permit, I was told that price was decided because of the time of how much it cost to buy and have to repair it all. And someone in that group, which is the Falcon Green Rapper Council, suggested that it might have also been kind of prohibitive as well to keep people from, well, not keep people, but discourage people from wanting to come trap one. Which why they would do that, I don't know, because parasols aren't any kind of, there's no threat from trapping people. The cost of the permit was supposed to be based on recovering the agency's time and administering it, and that's across the board. So, you know, my time processing the application, the biologist in the field's time, well, yes, there's a problem there. The game warden's time, what they have to deal with enforcing it. And so the depredation permit price that was suggested is $500 per permit. Well, when we went to commission, commission didn't like that, and it's now issued $250. So we are, we're giving out a permit that we're not recovering our cost on. How the non-resident, once this permit was determined, I don't know what's involved with that. But I have brought it up before to people like, you know, my superiors, that the price for this one is a little
steep.
Steep, because it doesn't take me any longer to do a non-resident permit than a resident permit. In fact, I do it faster because non-residents don't have violations in our system typically. So I have nothing to call or check on, and I just freak out. I mean, my time, I don't know about law enforcement, but I don't spend any more time doing a non-resident application than I do a resident. And it will be something I bring up because $63, $252.
And you said the permit fees are statutorily capped, right? What are they capped at?
I'd have to look. This one may not say. I'll have to look what this one said. My code book's up there. Right, so if you come here and you want to export something commercially, you have to have money. So if you come in from another state and you catch one snake and you want to take it back to the state, you don't need a non-APU permit. You need a hunting license and that's it.
But if you come to the state and you catch one snake and you want to take it back to your state and sell it,
you have to have a non-APU permit.
There you go.
Or breed it.
Or breed it. You have to have a non-APU permit.
When you catch it.
Non-game permits. This one is bodily counter, by the way. I didn't correct by that. It's $19. Residents 19, non-game, or non-residents 63. Bodily counter, alleged to collect from the wild, alleged to possess over 25 white or 6 blacklists of each species. You can only sell to Texas non-game dealers. You can also, like I said, you can use it just to possess over the limits. You know, there are people who do that. They have 50 box permits or whatever. or they're doing rescues or education or something, and they just want to cover themselves for, you know, getting in 53 adults from some crazy woman's collecting. Both of these require a hunting license to collect. So neither of these licenses exempt you from having that hunting license if you're going to collect in the wild. The new reptile amphibian stamp or herb stamp lets you collect on the roadside. Cannot be used for commercial collection. These rules, these regulations specifically prohibit commercial collection on public property. So any animals, wildlife, reptiles, amphibians, which you collect on the roadside with a herb stamp, cannot ever be used in a commercial activity. They cannot be bred, cannot be sold, cannot be offered for sale. Because they were collected on public property.
Yeah, but once the snake goes on to private property.
Right. Now, if he keeps going, he goes on a private property that you have permission to be on and collect on.
So you don't want to just chase it off the road. You want to keep chasing it.
Chasing it all the way to your house.
The house is
waiting. In property, you have to. Okay, so whitelist. This is 65.331D. This is page 9 in the commercial regulations. So everything that starts on page 9 is whitelist. It goes to page 12. Blacklist starts on page 12. It is 65.331D. It doesn't say white and black. That's just how we refer to it. Somebody decided that was a good way to refer to it. I'm not sure why.
Actually, for a long time, Matt tried really hard not to have people refer to it as that. And
well, that's commonly used throughout the states, blacklist.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And yet, you actually have gray lists, too. There's some states that try to have, yeah.
He gave up after about a year.
Turtles is a gray list?
I'll make a note. We need to add it.
Right. This presentation had the whole white list in it, I guess, because at the time it was written, I don't know why. Anyway, so just run down the white list real quick. You're supposed to see it. Not really done on this. One of these, you're just here. We'll flip through them.
Moving it off the road so you don't run over
it. Although I don't know if anyone's going to give you a hassle if you're moving a box turtle off the stem.
But they will if you're doing it in Sanders. Yeah, once again, in Harris County, no. In Sanderson, probably.
So if you want to take a picture of that box turtle in a certain setting, you want to move it 2 feet, you need the license. If you just want to chase it over there, then you're okay. Just don't touch it.
If you move it with a stick, you're not taking possession of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the same thing as, like,
if you move it with a stick, though, and chase it, that's harassment, is it not?
Well, see, that's the thing is, there's harassing game species. I don't think there's anything about harassing.
Non-games.
I mean, poking it with a stick is one thing, beating it with a stick makes it another.
Why round up? It's legal to beat it with a stick, but not poking it with a stick.
And actually, I don't know. Well, I guess
there's still.
Right, that's you're going to come under abuse then.
Wildlife thing. I think in on game species, there's definitely something in there about harassing trappers. That's like a big, they'll get you arrested.
Yeah.
Apparently harassing, we have that clearly in our regulations on there.
Fishermen, hunters.
Yeah, you harassing them, messing with their traps, that kind of thing is illegal. Harassing wildlife, I think it's
illegal. We need to get more put in there about harassing trappers.
But there's only one salamander on the, like this. Now, I've got, this needs to be clarified because there's not just the tiger salamander. Because the there's two subspecies, I think.
Yeah.
And one of them is, it's common even tiger fin. It's totally not even, this is the stuff that bothers me because I get a report, and Jennifer didn't even have the other salamander in the database by its other common name. So this stuff bothers me. This is what bothers me. You'll see, I think all the rattlesnakes, except for timber rattlesnakes, is threatened, but all the rattlesnakes are on the white list. A lot of the snakes are on the white list.
Well, that's the first one.
Hey, you said it was easier for you to process an out-of-state permit than it was an in-state check background. So that means if someone from out-of-state has had a previous violation in the state, that's not going to come up?
Oh, if they had one in Texas? Yeah, I'll see it.
Okay.
If they've got violations
in Texas. But if they have one in Oklahoma, I'm not going to see that.
These are the mammals that are on the white list. There's a few. We've got a few folks in Dubai, squirrels, state. Prairie dogs are on here. There's a couple folks in 13 line. Okay, so this is just some things. This is for good things for non-meat dealers and non-meat permit holders to know. You need your permit on your person. Like with a hunting license, you must have your hunting license on your person. You need a valid ID, you need your hunting license, you need your non-game permit, and you need a permit on your person. You need a non-game dealer permit for each permanent place of business. An employee or an agent or someone who said you can sell regular sliders to people at your permanent place of business can. You go to a show, you go to a flea market. Biggest issue, only the person named on the permit can do commercial activity. Offer for sale, save money, give people the animal. Only the named permit holder can do that. And that's a temporary location. So the facility address on the permit is the only location where anybody that you want to allow can do commercial activity. We problem with this at flea markets and sidewalk roads.
She's got to be getting to the land. We're getting back to the black and white.
We tell people about it. We're going to make them take them off the table or confiscate them, and then they contact the FDA. Yes, and their cover letter, when you're on the permit, says we must abide by the FDA's orange rule.
Because I will admit, I have spoken to people at flea markets and fairs who are giving away,
they're selling
regular sliders, and the first thing out of their mouth is, I have permission from the game warden. I can sell these. Like,
They shouldn't be.
And that's the first thing they'll tell you is, well, part of all I have a permit for. That's not the regulation I'm even talking about.
Well, and that people don't comprehend that, whether you're permitted or under federal law or state law, that doesn't exempt you from federal or state law, respectively, that you're not permitted.
I mean, it's not that I agree with the board's rule. My issue is the regular slide.
Well, this very issue came up when we had a multi-state discussion about salmonella outbreaks.
Were you in on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
It was the CDC, the FDA, us,
yeah.
All
a bunch of other
fish and wildlife agencies, the affected states where they're having outbreaks.
Well, and so they showed several examples of specific outbreaks of salmonella linked directly to regular sliders smaller than 4 inches, and time and time again they showed 1,957 adults and all this, and it's related that somebody had one in El Paso. It seems to be a spot where there's a lot of the sort of roadside baby turtles. Sales and there are several cases in Texas of that. So whether you agree with it or not, like that, the whole salmonella issue that people have heard about is real, and to the point that CDC is taking a new look at it because the scale of magnitude of these outbreaks.
we need to let Megan go ahead and get through the slides, and then we'll take our break, and then we'll come back and we'll have some question and answer. And we'll talk about Florida with Linda, and we'll compare and contrast it with Ken Foos, who'll talk about Nevada, and Gwen will talk about Minnesota.
I'm just going to turn it over to you faster. Okay, non-game dealers, you know, we need a copy of the permit at the location. I don't think it says it needs to be hung where it's visible, but it does seem to be there. The place of business is identified on the application. If it's identified on the application, it's what's on the permit. I think this was for law enforcement, so it doesn't really concern at all. Again, like I said, if you're conducting business at a temporary location, a location other than the address named on the permit, only the permit holder, main permit team can be doing that with a copy of their permit on their person. These always expire August 31st, so if you want to go to a show the weekend of August 28th, and you buy one from me and I issue it to you August 25th, it expires August 31st, so you can reapply. So it's $63 within the next week.
Virtually all permits and licenses for TPNW expire on August 31st.
No, most of them.
Virtually all.
Most of them, right. And most of them, they do have an end date when they expire. There's a set of about three that have a year from or 5 year from issuers, but most of them have a set end expiration date regardless of when it's issued. Most of them it is in August, though. This is about... This is mainly from taking turtles. That's where this is from. So, you know, traps. It's like with anything. You set a trap out, it's got to be labeled name, address, when you put it out. So turtles, this is what I was talking about. There's a separate section on turtles for the whitelist. They're treated like, these four turtles are treated like whitelist species. So there is a limit, possession limit of 25 of each species without a permit. But they're the only turtles you can commercially collect in Texas. So we have a couple of trap things here. The opening has to be above water at all times. You don't want to drown them. And the holding area of the trap has enough area in it above water to keep them from drowning. So, I need to fill out an application and send it to me with a non-refundable fee. I think this is from law enforcement. Just to make everybody aware, there are cases where we can deny permit issuance or permit renewal based on violations that you've gotten on receipt. If you have been finally convicted of any parks and wildlife code during the 5 year prior to applying, we can deny your permit. If you get a violation, becomes a conviction, send in your renewal, I have to, it shows up as soon as I see, I have to check that every time. I have to review it with my supervisors and everything and make sure that we're going to renew your permit. So this is something to keep in mind. Any Parks and Wildlife Code violation becomes a conviction, you can get your permit taken away. I like to remind people of this because you can get a, now, we don't typically do this, get a ticket for not having a life vest. Technically, we could choose to not renew your permit or issue a non-renewal permit. Now, we don't do that. It usually, when we deny, it's because you received a non-game dealer violation, non-game violation of some kind, or game legally possessing game animals, things that apply to this. Now, what's going to happen when we redo these, to clarify these regs and keep them, is all the permits. We're trying to make the what we deny on or what we consider for denial consistent across the board, because all my permits are different. They're all different. So they've done it with the deer permits, and everything deer gets to go first. So they made it, you know, where it's applicable. Like deer breeder, if you have a conviction for certain violations within certain chapters of the subchapters of the regulations, there's about four or five chapters that they have that with. Or you have a game violation, possession, live game possession violation. You know, getting the water safety ticket is not going to get you from it. So we're going to, and the law is going to have to shout in these regulations. It says any of the record keeping stuff. So if you turn, technically, if you turned in your renewal late, I could not give you a permit back, which would mean I would deny half of the renewals because half of the late every year.
Exactly. So the shall is mandatory, so you have to deny them.
It says nay on that. But the renewal says shall. So that's another workplace where it's inconsistent. They should all say nay. Why are we making ourselves have to deny somebody for their report being late? I want the discretion to go, okay, it's a day late. You know, they put it in the mail, it's postmarked before, it got here because of the mail, or it's postmarked the day after. I'm not going to hammer somebody because they forgot to go to the post office. So taking those shalls out, because we should never be forced to deny somebody. We should always have the discretion to determine when we should or shouldn't.
And that's in regulation, right?
Yeah. It's not in the code. And this one is one that it's 5 years prior. Some of them, most of them it's 5 years prior. Some it's two. The record keeping is always 2 years. The statute of limitations, I think, is typically 2 years. Okay, here's the shall. This is what I was talking about. Shall only issue a permit to any person who has not complied with the applicable requirements of 330, which is the record keeping. So you didn't get a ticket. You just turned it in late. You didn't fill out the purchase log when you had purchases. I don't even think Jennifer was doing that. I mean, now she would send a letter that said, I'm not renewing this until you send this. And if you never send it, then we never renew you. But to send somebody a letter saying, it was 2 days late, I'm not renewing it.
Yeah.
We could if we wanted to, but. The permits are named as individuals. This permit, I typically don't have people asking, but we want it to be in the business name. We never issue these permits to businesses. Now, some of the inland fisheries permits might, I'm not sure, but. A permit is always issued to a person. The application has their name, their address, their phone number, their driver's license number, and their social security number. They're the ultimate one responsible for things that happen. So we have somebody to come to and go, why are these things getting turned in? Why is this report wrong? We have somebody to actually make responsible. Now we can have the business name on there, and it will if you put it on there, but the business as a whole is not responsible. A person is. So record keeping, like I said, we give you report forms to do. Non-game permit holders are supposed to maintain records if they don't turn them in. You have to maintain daily records, collection logs, permit numbers of people you bought from. They're due in August. Retain they kept available for 2 years. We develop policy for periodic evaluation. I think there's a rotation where the regs are evaluated every 5 years. So, like I said, rehab regs have not been reevaluated since 97. Because every time Robert McDonald comes by and asks, everybody goes, nah, because no one has wanted to answer. But they're on a 5-year cycle. So if something isn't super important, it will be put on a list and wait until that cycle comes up. We won't. You know, every time some little thing is found, you aren't going to run the commission to do it. It's not a 5-year cycle. So this is the turtle part. These four species, so common snapper, redbird slider, and two subspecies of soft shell or species of soft shell. These are the only four turtles that can be collected in Texas for commercial purposes. The rest of the turtles can be collected for pets, for education, but they cannot be collected for commercial purposes. You can only collect on private land and private water. With landowner permission, still need a hunting license. And that's it.
Okay, thank you very much, Megan. Really appreciate it. So as Jess said, we're gonna take a 10